This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Survivor 48 is here, and after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. Remember, the Buckets and Bets promo. We'll give you a keyword later this hour. You have a chance to head to the Hard Rock, Seminole, Hollywood, watch all the basketball games, place some bets, have a good time. So listen for the keyword later this hour. Joining us right now on the Rude Guest Hotline is Kyle Finnegan, who, of course, was an all-star a year ago, and he signed a new contract.
Look at that. Got him back in the fold.
Clap that up. Stay here in D.C. for a while. What's up, Kyle?
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Of course.
Hey, man. Yeah, thanks for being on.
Congrats on your one-year, $6 million deal to get you back in with the Washington Nationals. Has to feel good to sign that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, free agency, my first trip through free agency, so to end up back with the Nats on a deal that I feel great about has been fun. It's exciting to see all the boys again, and we're here in beautiful Florida getting ready to go.
So you don't have to tell us the teams that you were talking to, your agent was talking to, but just kind of give us the idea of what that was like, because you don't know if you're coming back to Washington, you're a free agent, your agent's obviously trying to get you the best deal in a good situation. What's it like as a player? I mean, you kind of just waiting for calls from him, texting him back and forth every day going, what's the deal? What was that like mentally?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. You stay in touch almost on a daily basis. And, you know, initially when I became a free agent, there were a bunch of teams that reached out just to kind of touch base and say, you know, we'll be in on you, you know, later on into the off season. So early on, it's very slow. And then around the winter meetings, you know, teams start to talk and things start to pick up, and it's kind of like waves of signings. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of monitor, you know, you stay in touch with the teams and you relay what you're looking for. They kind of, you try to extract maybe where that team sees you. And as names start to come off the board, you know, it starts to narrow and you find a team that you feel like is zeroed in on you. And that's kind of how it progresses. Mm-hmm. You know, my process took a little longer than most, but, you know, had lots of teams that were involved and, you know, just really taking my time to get the best deal possible.
Awesome.
Talking to Kyle Finnegan, who, of course, was an all-star a year ago. I kind of want to go back and go through your journey into Major League Baseball, because I think a lot of closers, most closers, probably start off as starters. And I think you started your minor league career as a starter. When did you make the transition to relief pitcher, and did that suck for you? I'm kind of wondering, because if you're a starter, maybe you want to continue being a starter. What's it been like over the years transitioning to closer?
Yeah, my first two full seasons in minor league ball, I was a starter and had some early success. I actually started the All-Star game my first full season as a starter. And then the following year,
who were you pitching for then?
I was in the Oakland Athletics organization, the Beloit Snappers in the Midwest.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, okay. Baby. And then my second year, was not so great. I was in high A in the California League, and I threw a lot of innings. You know, I took the ball every 5 days and, you know, threw my four or five. Just happened to be giving up a few too many runs for their liking. So they thought that, you know, my stuff would play better in the bullpen. So I made the transition the following year, and I think it was 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And then really just, you know, kind of took off from there. Had a lot of success right away and was able to jump up a few levels fairly quickly once I transitioned to the bullpen.
How's your approach different as a reliever versus a starter? I mean, obviously you do different things kind of like for your body, et cetera. But what about just like setting up, you know, batters and that sort of thing? How does that change?
Yeah, absolutely. As a starter, you know, you're really aware of that you got to face these guys 2-3 times in a game. So, you know, you got to be aware of what pitches you're showing them, or, you know, not getting into patterns or repetitive. And as a reliever, it's kind of like, what are your best 2 pitches and how can you expose the hitter's weakness, you know, as quickly as possible? You know, you're only going to face them once most likely. So, reliever is more so relying on your best stuff and just attacking the hitter with that. A starter is much more, you know, that mind game of keeping them off balance and, you know, remembering how you attacked them the last at bat. And so starter, much more of a mind game. Reliever is kind of like, you know, best on best.
So Kyle, I don't know if you've seen this viral clip of Eddie, I think it's Eddie Perez. Was he Greg Maddux's catcher? And they talk about how, I don't know if he did it for his entire career, but through many years, that Maddux was actually calling the game, right? And he called the game the way he caught the ball. So if his glove was open, then it meant something. If his glove was closed when the catcher was throwing it meant something. If he touched his mouth, that meant like breaking ball. And no one ever caught on to it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw, if seen that clip or not. As a professional, like, what jumps out at you when you hear a story like that?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about one of the best to ever do it. The guy was just an absolute doctor out there. And
could you imagine doing that?
No, it's crazy. Like, how comfortable he was and how sure of himself he was on the mound to, you know, to get away with something like that is just insane. Like, that guy just knew how good he was, and he was out there just like having fun, competing, playing a game.
Right.
So, you know, you go back and watch those clips, and it's just insane, like what he was able to do.
Who was your guy growing up? Who was your favorite player? Did you grow up near Detroit? Were you a Michigan guy?
I was born in Detroit, but I actually grew up in Houston.
Oh, okay.
But my entire family, both my parents, all my extended family are from New York. So I grew up Yankees.
Wow.
We watched all the Yankees games. So it was Clemens, Pettit, you know, all those guys. So, I really enjoyed, watching Andy Pettit.
Yeah.
So Kyle, for a guy that spent a lot of his years in Texas, you pitched at Texas State. I don't detect any sort of Texan accent. Like, did you just have it and lose it since you've been here in Washington? Like, I don't hear any of that in your voice.
No, I'm very much a mutt, I think. you know, I got the Northeastern family and then, you know, grew up in Texas my whole life. So I think, I don't know what type of accent I have, but it's definitely not Texan.
That must be very cool, by the way, to get the All-Star nod for the first time in your career in Texas. Yeah. How cool was that last season?
Oh, it was awesome, especially, you know, I was a super late addition to the team, so we were already in the middle of the All-Star break, and I got added on, you know, the day before the game. So, you know, that was one of two, you know, either Houston or Dallas were the only two places, like, my family could, you know, quickly get there. So it was a huge blessing that it was close to home, and I was still able to have, you know, 15, 20 family members make it out.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, as we're talking to Kyle Finnegan, closer for the Washington Nationals, about the outfield defense. So Dylan Cruz made a great play yesterday. He had played center field. He's not going to be playing center field because you got a great center fielder there. Talk about what it's like getting on the mound, knowing you have such great, at least, you know, outfield defense behind you.
Yeah, it frees you up to just attack the zone and not nibble and feel like you got to strike everybody out. You know, you, when you have a great defense, you're just getting ahead of the hitter and staying on him. And if he hits it, you can trust that you've got guys that can catch it and throw it behind you. So, watching what those young guys can do behind you has been fun. And they give us tons of confidence when we're on the mound to not worry about, that we're not alone out there and that they got our backs.
Kyle, what do you make of your teammate Dylan Cruz's quote from yesterday? He said, "We're not waiting for the future anymore. The future is now," talking about the 2025 Nats.
Yeah, I think, that's kind of been the vibe of camp is, we were building and, we're not coming. We're here now. So it's time to go. Our focus is on winning and nothing else. So we're definitely hungry and excited and can't wait to get up to DC and get this thing going.
So to talk about the starting rotation, the projected starting rotation and your thoughts about it. With McKenzie, obviously, is their number one. When he's on, he's just a stud. Jake Irvin, Mitchell Parker pitched really well last year. Trevor was hurt, but now he's back. Went out and got Soraka. So just kind of talk about the guys. I know they went out and signed a Japanese player. I'm not sure if he's a projected starter or bullpen, but just kind of talk about the rotation, especially at the top with Mac.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about McKenzie. I think you're talking about one of the next good ones in the game. He's got everything that you would want in a starter. And, I think he's going to lead this rotation. And, you had a guy like Soroka who, almost won a Cy Young, was part of a great Braves team for so many years. So, he's a guy that could be huge for us. And then of course, Trevor had an unbelievable year last year when he was feeling good, and to have him back and feeling healthy will be huge. And then obviously Irvin took a huge step forward last year, taking the ball every fifth day and going out there and doing his thing. And then I think the difference this year than years past is we have lots of options, behind those big four that are going to help us throughout the entire year. DJ Hers and Mitch and Shinosuke. So
yeah,
I think we're in a really good spot.
Kyle, I'm curious. We've been to spring training. We didn't go this year. What are you doing with all your free time down there? Are you a big golfer? I know you got three kids. I don't know how that works for you during spring training. But closers, what are you doing during spring training?
Yeah, the life of a reliever in spring training is pretty nice, I gotta say. Played a little golf a couple days ago, actually. So try to take advantage of that.
Can we bet on what you shot?
Let's just bet on his handicap. Oof.
Handicap.
Let's bet on what he shot.
It might be his first outing.
I don't think that's fair. He definitely just let out an oof.
He did.
That means it wasn't good.
There was an oof there. I heard it.
Well, I give you
my handicap, and I tell you where I played, and then you try to guess what I shot.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
All right, what's your handicap?
I'm a 13 handicap. So,
all right.
Not
right.
Great.
Right.
Not great.
Solid.
And we played Panther National, which is, it's a PGA. It's a PGA type course.
The slope? What's the slope?
Ooh, I do not know the slope.
All right. I'm going to say 93.
All right. Hold on. You're already in?
Yeah.
He's in with his guess.
13.
I'm going to go over. I'll say 97.
I think you're in that range. It's in the 90s. I'm going to say 94.
Yeah,
94, I think.
94.
It's a 147 slope, Valdez.
Ooh, that's difficult.
I don't know.
I would say like 101.
101?
Oh, all right. What'd you shoot?
You got me sandwiched there. I think, 96.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Hey,
it'll get better.
I mean, first outing.
Not bad.
When are you playing? When are you playing?
Windy.
Yeah.
Windy.
When are you playing next?
We got nothing scheduled.
Okay.
But it's kind of like a day of type thing. It's like you see a couple guys in the clubhouse. You got anything going on today? Nope. All right, let's go play.
Doesn't McKenzie play a lot? I think he's pretty good, isn't he?
Yeah, McKenzie plays. He's good. So when I played 2 days ago, it was me, McKenzie, Nate Lowe, and Riley.
Oh, cool.
All right, I want to real quick. We got to do WITB.
Yeah, what's in the bag?
All right. Are you a gearhead? You have new sticks? Like, what kind of driver are you playing? Come on, let's go through it.
So I got PXG has like a headquarters in Virginia.
Yeah.
So we got to go out there and like get the full full deal fitting and everything. So I got a full set of PXGs right now that I'm hitting, and then a Scotty putter.
Scotty putter. Oh, okay.
A mallet or blade?
Yeah. Such golf nerds.
Blade. Is that Newport? Newport Select or Newport 2.5?
Yeah, it's the 2.5.
These cigarettes or golf clubs?
That's what I have.
What's happening?
Valdez trying to flex.
All right, very nice.
So Mac was the best golfer. Who's the worst golfer on the squad?
Oh, he's not.
Or do they just not get out there?
He's not going to do his guys dirty like that. Or maybe he will. I don't know.
Of the guys that like play consistently, it's probably me.
Do you, how often are you playing?
Well, it's because you got young kids at home, so in the off season you're always with the kids.
Are you playing in the off season?
I mean, early on in the off season, I play, you know, maybe 2-3 times a week, just, you know, nine holes before I pick the kids up. But as the baseball stuff picks up, you know, you just gotta, you know, I'm at the mercy of my wife during the off season, so I like to hang out with her and do all the things she likes to do. So I play golf early and then not so much later in the off season.
Happy wife, happy life, right?
All right.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Opening day is right around the corner, bro. Can you believe it?
Yeah, it's crazy.
All right. Congrats, dude. And look forward to seeing you this year.
Yeah, thanks for joining us,
man. All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, it's Kyle Finnegan, who a couple seasons ago had an immaculate inning. Do you know what that is, Cakes?
Immaculate inning.
Oh. Yeah. Come on, baseball Cakes.
I do know what that is.
Baseball Cakes.
Hold on. Three pitches and three outs? Or
it'd be nine pitches. Yeah. But
nine pitches.
Yes. Strikeout. Okay. No ball. Okay.
No, yeah, three pitches.
Well, what about just three pitches?
Yeah, three pitches, three foul tips, you're out. That should be your immaculate inning.
How's that an inning? That's not
considered.
Well, no, your catcher catches it.
Oh, okay.
Three out. Straight back.
That's actually better.
It's way better.
One up to you.
Baseball Cakes is all over.
Well, find out the term for that.
Oh, there is no term. I just made it up.
Do you think it's ever happened in the history of life?
Yes.
Yes. 100%.
Three pitches, three outs?
Yes.
No, not three pitches, three outs. Three foul tip outs.
Probably.
The catcher.
Baseball's been around for a million years.
It didn't have to be that specific. I just meant like a pop fly.
Well, it'd have to be a foul ball, not a foul tip, because you have to catch that on the third strike.
Yeah, pop up.
According to the story, there have been several.
Well, why does it have to be a foul
three
tip?
Pitch innings?
It doesn't. He's right. Yeah. It doesn't. He's right.
Yeah, three pitch innings. That's your immaculate.
That's happened several times, according to
that's happened a lot.
AI.
Everything has happened.
Three ground balls. Of course, that could happen easy.
Everything has happened.
All right, remember, we'll give you the keyword for buckets and bets coming up shortly. We're the Junkies. Don't go anywhere.
Coming up in the final segment this hour, we will give you the keyword again for the Buckets and Bets contest at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, Hollywood, Florida. That's your destination for tip-off weekend. Odyssey's contest, March 20th to the 23rd for the Ultimate College Hoops viewing experience. So keep listening for your chance to win, to qualify. Because who doesn't like free trips, free swag?
Hmm.
It's always a good thing. All right, we should be joined shortly by Nick Dowd from the Washington Capitals.
Yep.
I believe he is joining us right now on the Rude
Doubter
guest hotline. It's Nick Dowd. He's powered by Verizon. Doubter, good morning. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Were you aware of the controversy from last night, the one-trick pony comment from Darren Pang? Now, to give you a little backstory, he was calling the game.
For TNT.
We were assaulting him for the first, 2 hours of the show today. And then our producer reached out to him, had him call in. He clarified his comments. He kind of, walked him back a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the controversy?
I heard about it on the bus. Yeah, someone brought it up. But
oh, wow.
What'd you say? Sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, no problem. Phone.
My 2-year-old showing me her new toy. I had heard about it, but I didn't read into the context.
What were the guys saying?
Did Ovi comment about it?
We'll leave that one on the bus.
Okay. I love it.
That's good. The guys were riled up.
That's all we need to hear, Dowder.
The guys were riled up.
Hey, maybe. I mean, like our first thought was maybe one trick pony because all he does is score goals. So I mean, you know, like that's a good thing, right? So,
of course,
it's a great thing.
Well, I think what he was referring to is just like from his little office area. That's kind of like the reputation, and he tried to clarify and say, hey, he scores from all everywhere. Over this year, especially. And then I just brought up. I think it's insulting just because the guy's a great passer. The guy's been jacking guys up against the boards for 20 years.
He's a great teammate,
yeah,
obviously.
I mean, when Dale Hunter was here, he was laying down blocking shots with his body. Like,
oh, God, I know. I've been doing it for like 9 years. I feel exhausted. He's been doing it for like 20.
Yeah. Right? So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey,
I see a Ruru. Thank you. I'm sure I've met Penger and talked to him a couple times. He doesn't strike me as the guy that would.
Yeah, I don't think he meant
that would make those comments
deliberately. And,
you know,
yeah,
deliberately. I'm sure it was a little bit of a miscommunication.
Hey, this might be off the record, but I'm gonna ask you anyway. when you guys are on the bus, do you guys talk about, hey, 9 more goals? We're looking at this game. He probably is gonna break it in this week. I mean, do you guys even target that, or you just go game by game?
Yeah, no, we don't target it, but I mean, you know, it gets,
you just know it's coming
in a funny way, right? Like, you know, like the great chase is down to 9, or someone will kind of yell out and be like, "What are we at now?" You know, and then you know, someone will say, "Oh, we're down to 9," and then you know, that's kind of like about it. But no one's like, no one's targeting. Said, yeah. I mean, if he gets an Ovech trick, he could do it next game.
That's true.
Hey, Nick, yeah. are
I
you,
like that name, the Ovech trick.
Have you or any of your teammates like fanboyed it up yet with Ovi as far as like getting an autographed sweater from him or a stick? I know he's like, he collects all of his sticks and he has them at his place back in Russia. Like he's got a collection of like hundreds of sticks.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
Getting one of these like in the last 10 games before he breaks the record, you're not going to get one of those. But have you gotten anything from Ovi so when you're older, you're going to show your grandkids, like, hey, I played with the greatest goal scorer of all time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I'm just waiting on the – I'm gonna ask him for the stick when he breaks the record.
Yeah.
That one.
Right.
That's kind of what I'm waiting on. I feel like I've been here long enough, you know.
Right. Yeah, that works.
Hold on. Ru, what do you need?
Ruru.
Moana. She needs Moana.
What's her name?
Ruby.
Ruby.
Ruby. Oh,
Ruby.
There you go.
Ruby, 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 Ruby.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know all the songs Moana from Moana as a parent now?
Oh, yeah. Moana 1 and 2.
Yeah.
I think I spent $30 on Moana 2.
I saw it in the theater.
At home.
Yep. Spent more than 30.
Yeah, nice. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. So, no, but for Obi Stick, yeah. I mean, when I first got here, like, what is it, 7 years ago? Like the only stall in the entire dressing room that was open when I got here, because not one guy, like I was the only new guy in the whole team, was right next to Obi in the practice rink, and that's where I've sat ever since. So I remember when I walked in, dropped my bag down in MedStar, and you know, looked up, see my name bar, and then I look over and Obi's like right next to me. I remember, you know, I kind of like younger guy, and I, you know, I hadn't even met Obi yet, and I was like, holy moly! I was like, mm-hmm. I guess I'm sitting next to Obi. But I've had him sign a couple sticks in the past. You know, like, well, not this year yet, but you know, last year, the year before, however long. Yeah, I've had him sign some stuff because I mean, yeah, it's not that I was thinking of it as, you know, history or, you know, like, oh, I gotta get it. It's just that he's, you know, regardless of the race, he's still the greatest goal scorer and one of the most iconic players of all time. So, I mean, I've collected a couple sticks. I'm not like a huge collector, but I got, you know, I have an Oshie stick. I have a Backstrom stick. I have an Obi stick. A couple other teams that I've played on, you know, maybe a stick from one or two of the big guys on those teams. So, but yeah, always, I mean, he's always been great with that. He'll, for teammates and family and stuff, he'll sign you know, whatever you ask.
Is he totally one of the guys? Like, no diff. Like, once you guys are just horsing around or whatever.
Is he
just one of the guys at the, like, still at this point?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, I would say yes, he is. I mean, I would still say, you know, like, he is gonna get stuff asked to him that not other people get asked to him, and he's gonna, you know, it's not like guys are coming up to me and be like, "Hey, daughter, can you sign a stick for my kids?" You know, I mean, they're not doing that, but so always gonna have things asked of him that none of us are ever going to have asked of us, but that comes with the territory. You know, that's like any icon, you know, that's Michael mm-hmm. Jordan, Tom Brady. I mean, you know, like, honestly, you could really put them up there with those types of players. It's just hockey's a smaller market. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, he's right up there with Tom Brady in my eyes in the game of, in the game. So, but no, he still loves, you know, playing cards on the plane and, you know, I mean, just, yeah, I guess I can't describe
who breaks his balls the most.
Probably Johnny Carlson, I'd say.
Oh,
you know?
Okay. Because yeah. They've been around the
yeah,
longest.
They go
probably.
Way back.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been around the longest. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, always, like anybody can get after him. But again, I think hockey is the culture of hockey has a lot of, you know, underlying respect built into it. You know, just like, you know, you're not going to get on the elevator before certain guys get on the elevator. You're not going to get your food at, you know, mealtime before certain guys don't get their food at mealtime.
Really?
You know,
it's pecking order.
How do you know when to get on the freaking elevator?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, how, you know, you guys look around your office, right? If you know who's been there the longest.
So you
know?
Wait until
yeah, it's us, Doubter. So we've been around the longest.
Right. So we get to go first. So you,
yeah,
so you have to wait. He gets to leave the locker room first, essentially. Is that how it works?
No, ironically enough, he's actually the last guy on the bus. Mm-hmm. Which is also a pecking order too. You know, so it's, yeah, I mean, you know, if you really want to get into it, it's kind of funny, but we, you know, get off the bus, go into the hotel and, you know, everyone's waiting outside the elevator so we can, you know, certain guys can get on first
get
and
out.
Then you kind of follow.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. That is.
Hey,
badass,
Doubter,
actually.
Doubter, I've got three Caps jerseys, I think four, but one of them is Jacob Vrana. He was my guy. And I saw he got waived yesterday. Any thoughts on that? I'm kind of bitter. I mean, I'm guessing there's a reason, but I like Vrana.
Yeah, and I mean, on, you know, the I think, you know, he isn't. I mean, I think he's played. Yes, Rue. Oh yeah, we'll hook it up in a second. We've played. You know, he's only played one game in the last 21.
Right.
And on it, he played with me actually, and I thought he played very well for, you know, to ask a guy to step in on late notice because mm-hmm. Willie was sick, you know, like you don't get that call until kind of midday. Right. And you're kind of, you know, you gotta be a professional and kind of mentally prepare quickly. You know, and then he hasn't played, right. Like there's definitely something to, you're not up to game speed because you haven't played in a while. And I right. thought he played really well. And then, you know, if you look at his stat line this year too, he's 7 goals and something assists. I mean, I think I read the thing. He was on pace for, he played an 82-game season. I mean, it was 30-plus points. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a whole lot to say about it, minus that, you know, I think B's a really good player. I think he adds a lot when he's in the lineup. And you know, I think he's a really, really good person, nice kid. So
hopefully he'll land on his feet.
Yeah, I mean, he'll land on his feet, no question. But, I, you know, it's I mean, you never like to see anybody get waived or traded
right,
or anything,
of course
right?
Not. So, all right, we'll let you go. Ruby's calling your name, bud.
Yeah, we're going to hook Moana up to the big speaker here.
So. All right, nice. Doubter. Nice. Best of luck against Detroit tomorrow. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate
thanks.
It.
Thanks, guys.
See you, buddy.
Yeah, bye-bye.
That's Nick Doubter from the Washington Capitals, powered by Verizon. Don't forget, coming up later, Antonio Daniels will join us. We'll talk NBA with him coming up at 9:25 here on The Fan.
So I got to put this one on landfill.
Everybody dance.
Because when he plays this, I know B's going to sing. But I actually want to get to the guests as fast as possible on this one. Maybe Gary will sing it with you.
Fiesta forever.
Speaking of fiesta, joining us now on the Rude Guest Hotline is our friend Mr. Gary Clark. Gary, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How y'all doing?
We good, brother,
we're great,
man. What's happening?
Two-time Super Bowl champion.
I'm trying to be B. Mitch. I want to sing like B. Mitch.
No, you don't. We can have him play the music some more.
When I
want,
start
Gary.
Singing, the dogs start howling. No.
I just said I wanted to sing like B. Mitch, not that I could sing like B. Mitch.
Gary, I know you had a big event over the weekend that I want to talk about, but I'd like to start anyway, with the trade for Deebo Samuel. You won 2 Super Bowls with the Redskins, 4 Pro Bowls. You know what it was like. Obviously, the posse is a pretty legendary receiving group between you, Ricky Sanders, and Art Monk. What's it like to be in a receiver room that has a number of kind of dog top options on it?
Well, I mean, it's always good to have, for a quarterback especially, it's always good to have a host of receivers. A lot of teams have one to two really good receivers, but when you have two to three really good receivers, that makes it extremely hard for a defense to try to shut somebody down because you can't double everybody, you know. Yeah. And with Terry McLaurin, and I mean, Terry's just a beast. And then you have Debo coming in now, who's already proven himself to be legendary. So it's going to be a nice addition, I believe.
Hey, like, Ricky was a deep threat. Art was that guy who run those medium routes. You would just take it. You go deep. You would take it short, go to distance. Having guys that do different things and you know they do them well, how much strain does that put on a defense?
I mean, a lot, quite honestly. I mean, because seriously, back when we played and we did have the posse, like, you kind of pick your poison, and a lot of times you picked wrong. I mean, honestly, between all of us, Ricky Sanders does not get the credit he deserves. There's nothing Ricky couldn't do. He could go short. He could go mid-range. He could go deep. Quite honestly, Art, too. I mean, people forget, before me and Ricky got there, Art was our long-range receiver, along with Charlie Brown, of course. But when you got guys who are really, really believe in themselves, like I know Terry does, and I'm pretty sure this Debo does as well. I don't know him, unfortunately, but I'm pretty sure, based off his playing ability, that he does definitely believe in himself. When you have that air about yourself, you ain't got to tell you, B, Mitch. Like, you like, punt it to me. I don't care if somebody's right in my face. I'm going to catch it, make this person miss, and take it to the house. When you got people that got that type of mentality, it's extremely hard to shut them down, because at some point in time, they just get mad. They get mad when you shut them down on one play, you shut them down on two play. And the best thing about playing receiver, you can shut me down all day, but if I still get one on you, I got one on you, and I score a touchdown.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, what do you make just of having watched Debo, kind of the level of physicality he brings as a wideout? I mean, he's a different dude.
He has,
man,
your mindset, and he runs the ball like I would try and run a Gary.
I mean, that's just that's the type of mindset you want everybody to have, because if you can run the ball like B. Mitch, like B. Mitch is running through people as well as making them miss. I was going to make you miss. I was not going to try to run through you, because I didn't have that capability like a B. Mitch. But when you got somebody that can do all those things, that's special. And again, lining them up beside Terry. I mean, Terry Mack, a beast, man. I mean, I've never, quite honestly, he's one of the best I've ever seen play the game. And this is in the beginning of his career. If he can maintain that throughout the rest of his career, having those two guys together is just going to be, I like our chances of going back to the championship game and winning it this time.
That would be something, man, going to a Super Bowl. We're talking with Gary Clark. You can give him a follow at Gary Clark Inc. on X. Gary Clark, two-time Super Bowl winner with the Redskins. And I just found this. B. Mitch and Doc always give me a hard time. I like to tweet out quotes from our guests as the show goes on. And I searched, and on Twitter, on X, they have a GIF of that. I feel like I always bring this up when we talk. That Monday night game against the Giants in the Meadowlands, you caught that bomb, like a 60-yarder from Rip to take the lead in that game. That play action, Rip kind of rolled to his left, I think. It was cool to watch. I love that, watching that play. I imagine you remember it fondly.
I did, because I had dropped one a little earlier, so I had to make it up.
Wideouts, man.
Got the
always
off
remember
my back
the drop.
Because that Giants game was, I mean, the Giants were our Achilles heels for about 3 years in a row. So those games, I hated the Giants more than I hated the Cowboys, just because, you know, anytime you get beat six times by a team in a row, that has to sticking your gun, man. You know, have an opportunity to come back and win that game. And it really just, nobody, we were definitely, 91 was the best team. For me, the best team in NFL history, quite honestly. I really do believe that in terms of Super Bowl teams.
I kind of agree with you.
But we didn't get our props until we beat the Giants. Even though we was like 7-0 or 8-0 before we played the Giants, something like that. We didn't get our props until we beat the Giants, when people truly believe, because the Giants had beat us 3 years before, both games each season. So it was anytime I could play well against the Giants, which most of my best receiving games were probably against the Giants statistically wise. It was a big deal for us, especially that year, because we knew how good we were as a football team.
Yeah, I mean, that team was loaded. I think, obviously, now for the Commanders, you've got McLaurin, you've got Deebo Samuel, who's a different kind of receiver altogether. Like, yeah. he's a different guy. And then you've got Luke McCaffrey under contract. What did you – obviously, he was a rookie kind of converting to a lot of things, right? He had to get used to the speed of the NFL, and he's still kind of learning the position after playing quarterback for most of his life. What did you think of Luke as a rookie, and where do you think he could grow this year?
I mean, I think football's in his blood, as we all know. I mean, he comes from a family of ball players who play at that level. So,
right.
I mean, I think it's just in his blood. I think he knows how to pivot very quickly. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, anytime when I saw him as a return guy, I just kind of smiled. I was like, okay, he's a return as well. I mean, that was kind of interesting to me as well. I mean, good return man. He's no B. Mitch. He's no B. Mitch. Definitely not a B. Mitch. But to be able to go back there and do that, it's kind of more like a Ricky Sanders. Where Ricky was a utility guy when we first got him. Ricky did a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Return kicks, you know, every now and then return punts. But he didn't find his groove to his receiver until his second or third year. That's when he really found his groove and became the type of guy that we knew him to be. And I think McCaffrey's going to be similar to what Ricky Sander was. Well, he could almost probably be the best receiver on the team if he puts in the work every year.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool comp. I mean, mm-hmm. if he gets to close to Ricky. I have said this before. I still don't understand why Ricky Sanders' name isn't in the Ring of Honor. That's just a miss to me. The damn president called him out. I mean, remember Ronald Reagan looking
Where's
to throw
Ricky
a pass?
Sanders?
Yeah, like he should be in the Ring of Honor just for that. Maybe that's something the new owners aren't even aware of, and will.
That's what I think. I think the owners just aren't aware of it. Even quite honestly, even before I got put in, I remember Mr. Snyder apologized because he thought I was already in.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, a lot of people, I mean, he thought I was already in when it came to his attention that I wasn't in. Then they put me into the Ring of Fame. So, I mean, Ricky Sanders definitely deserves to be in there. I mean, come on now. We don't win Super Bowl 22 without Ricky Sanders.
All right. Yeah. We're going to say this loud for everyone to hear, and a lot of folks listen. Let's get Ricky in this year.
Let's do it.
Easy one. I will
be long overdue.
Yeah.
Long overdue.
I will send a text on that
Slick.
One. I will send a text on that one. Going forward, Gary, what do you think this offense still needs? Obviously, they could lose a lot, right? I think you got to get Ertz back. Questions on the line. Maybe you're adding a running back. Like, where do you think offensively they have to add?
I think they got to just tighten up their offensive line a little bit better. I mean, we're fortunate that Jaden's able to escape a lot of things that comes his way. But if we tighten it up a little longer, I mean, yeah. It's going to be unbelievable what they're able to do. I mean, the same team didn't go into the championship game, is what I feel like. The same team didn't go into the championship game. You take one play away, and I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, by the way. I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but on that fourth down play in the first half, they shut down that fourth down fade route that got caught.
Mm-hmm.
We get the ball. It's fourth down. 10 yards, win field goal race down there.
Right.
We go in winning that game, not winning, leading 15-14 at half. Leading. But they scored a touchdown based off that great fade route to the guy called. And then we fumbled the ball, and then they scored another touchdown. That's a 14-point swing in less than 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
It's kind of hard to overcome that.
That's it. That's the difference in the game. Momentum's everything. And when the team has momentum, then they really, because then they really start to believe in themselves. And then when you do something like that and you give it up, you start not believing in yourself. So, I mean, we're a step away. I can relate. My first championship game, I lost to the Giants. Damn Giants. Lost to the Giants. You know, I went into that game feeling good about myself. It's like my first Pro Bowl year. You know, I'm kind of cocky. I'm a little arrogant. And I didn't have a good game. And I didn't practice that week, that Friday. You know how you Friday we come up, B. Mitch?
Mm-hmm.
I passed on it. You know, I rested my hamstrings, had like a bum ankle, just rested it. But that was just, I should have went out that Friday. But I lost my first championship game. And because I didn't play good, and I guarantee you, hopefully a lot of players felt this way on the Commanders, I made a deal with myself. If I ever had a chance to get into a championship game again, I was not going to lose. Because if you get to the championship, why lose the damn game? I would rather just not even play.
Yeah.
You know, to get in the championship and lose, because the next step is the Super Bowl. How can I do that? That's something every player's wishing for their whole life. And you get there, and you have a nerve to have a bad game like I did. I never forgave myself, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a grown man crying. I cried after the game. I cried for at least 3 months once a week after that was over.
Wow.
But I went to work the very next day when I got home. The very next symptom.
That's been a hell of a morning. I think, Gary, I love hearing that.
See, they think I'm the only person that get a little hyped up. I tell everybody, pound for pound, you're the baddest man I've ever met.
I appreciate that, B.
Well, Gary, I think one thing you'll love is I was in the locker room after they lost to Philly in the title game. I was in the locker room the next morning when they did locker clean out and had to deal with all the, you know, life comes at you fast. The day you lose, your season's over, and you got to you get a box, and you got to put all your stuff in it. There was not a single person that was happy with how it went. Happy that they got to the title game. Happy about the season. They were all just pissed they lost. And I think when I saw Jaden at the Super Bowl, I don't know, 10 days later or whatever, he was still just pissed they weren't playing. And I think that kind of leadership, even from a young guy, it is the right mindset. Nobody was happy with how it went, you know?
That's important to me. Like, there's nothing worse, you know, especially I call myself, I guess, the old school players. There's nothing worse than seeing a team when they lose a football game. For me, anyhow, to see them go across the field, hug the other freaking players on the other team who just kicked their butt. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm about sportsmanship, but I'll catch you 3 weeks after the season's over, and then we can talk about how you guys kicked our butt. But I'm not going to go hug you after you just kicked our butt. I'm pissed off. I'm trying to figure out what I did wrong that allowed that to happen and what my teammates did wrong to allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad to hear that these guys were upset about the loss. They don't have any smiles on their face, because when I see somebody has a smile on their face after somebody just kicked our butt and he's my teammate, I want to punch him in the face. That's what it is. I mean, just what it is. I don't get it. What do we have to be happy about?
Yeah.
There's nothing to be happy about. We just lost. There's nothing good about losing. Nothing.
Right.
There's nothing. People say you learn from it, and I get that. You do learn from losing, but you know what? That's one time I just want to be stupid. I don't want to lose. I just don't. I don't like it. There's nothing about it. It does not make me feel good. All it does make me drive harder, though. When we did lose that game against the Giants, I tell you, I was on a mission for the following season. And I hope the same thing happens to our team this year, that we go back to the championship game, but we win the championship game. Everybody who didn't play as good in the last championship game plays better. And it gives us a chance to really go and show what we can do in the Super Bowl. You know, I'm so mad. I mean, I'm 2-3 in NFC championship games, and that one game that we lost pisses me off. But I'm 2-0 in Super Bowls. So the key is being undefeated in Super Bowls. If you can do that, then you'll be happy. Not completely happy because you lost the championship game, but you're going to be happy for the rest of your life.
I think a lot of the guys on the team now, adding Deebo Samuels with a Terry, they have the mindset that you have. These guys are going to work, you know, and when you get receivers that work like that, then you can change the team. As Dan Quinn said the other day, he wants those skill position players that are violent.
Yeah.
Deebo is violent. Terry, once you start talking a little trash to Terry, becomes very violent.
Terry, between the lines, is a bulldog.
Terry's a beast, man. I mean, this is what I like about Terry. He's kind of a combination of me, Art, and Ricky Todd into one. He has Ricky's hands, he has art discipline, and he has my passion. But the best thing about him, like, unlike me, where I'm going to let it come all out at you, he can hold it inside, kind of like Art did. You know, he can hold it inside, but he's still passionate. He wants to win. He's not your friend after the game if they lose. That's not Terry. He's well disciplined. He's not going to say something stupid like I would say. You know, he's not going to be like, F you, because that's what that's made to my friends on the other team if they beat us. I'm not happy. If you win the game, I go lie to him and be like, you know what, we lucked up today, guys. You guys should have won. We just lucked out. I'll be that way if we won the game. If we lost the game, I'm not shaking your hand. I'm going in the locker room and figure out what the hell I did wrong.
Yeah. Talking with our friend Gary Clark here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude is the most reliable HVAC products in the DMV. Give Gary a follow at Gary Clark, Inc., INC. Dude, got to ask about the event this weekend. B-Mitch was telling me about it. Be describing the location of this thing, how big it was, how there were all these different areas. Tell us about what you put together and how it helped.
I'll tell you what, we just wanted to do a tribute gala to players, you know, past and present at the end of the day. When it came down to it, B. Mitch and Santana Moss, they were our legends that we wanted to celebrate and pay tribute to, because honestly, I don't think B. Mitch ever gets enough credit for how, I mean, to be the best at what you do and better than everybody else. I mean, better than everybody else. That's just huge. And Tana doesn't get, I mean, the cowboy killer, you know, he's known for being the cowboy killer, but he was a complete receiver all the way around. And to any time you play 14-plus years, I didn't play 14-plus years in this league. Anytime you can play that and still play at the same type of, Tana could have played another 3 years if he wanted to, quite honestly. I mean, that's how good he was. To maintain that conditioning, that speed, and that, he was a gentleman about the game, but I know internally he's not a gentleman. Internally, he is not a gentleman. He wants to put a knife through you every single time. And B. Mitch, again, like I was telling people before, I still don't believe B. Mitch was a quarterback. I think that's a lie. I don't think he ever played that position. I think he was a linebacker. Playing quarterback. I've never seen anybody come in and attack Not a quarterback. They're worried about getting hurt. B. Mitch was never that way. From the time he came in and put on a uniform, he wanted to fight everybody his rookie year in training camp, like everybody. I've never seen anybody do that before. And then to see what he did as a return guy, never been a return guy, not ever until he got into the NFL, that's just simply amazing. What he was able to do, how he was able to do it, and the way he carried himself. And the best thing about B. Mitch is he's going to tell you the truth. Good or bad, he's going to tell you the truth. And that's what you can appreciate your teammates to do. That's all you want. Mm-hmm. Just be straight up with me. Tell me the truth. If I suck, let me know that I suck. It's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm not a man that can accept when I play bad and you're trying to get me to play better, then that's the problem. B. Mitch always brought guys together, made them play better. And the worst thing Washington ever did, and it could be one of the best things for B. Mitch, is they gave up on him for a second. He goes to Philly and makes them pay for it every single time that he plays them. I sit there and shook my head. I was like, why piss B. Mitch off? That's the one person you don't want to piss off.
Yeah.
It's the one person you don't want to do, because he's going to come back and hurt you. Same mentality. We have the exact same mentality.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think the best locker rooms have that, like, self-policed, self-discipline. Oh, yeah. And I think when you have that, it – when coaches don't have to step in, it really lifts a team up. Gary, last thing for me, I was listening to Doc over the weekend, maybe on Sunday, and he said Gary Clark is the new DMV Don King. That man can promote an event. So I don't know if you've ever been compared to Don King, but congratulations.
I hope not. I don't want to be Don. I definitely couldn't be Don, but I don't want to be Don either. But no, I mean, that's just something that when I get something in my mindset, I try to make it happen. I try to make it happen the best way that I can. And but I was very fortunate to have great sponsors that allowed us to put on such a great event for B. Mitch and Tana and Terry McGlynn. I mean, it allowed us to really be able to do it. Patty Pierlinardi, Firefly Sellers. I mean, without her contribution, I wouldn't be able to reward B. Mitch and Tana the way that we did. But they're well deserved, and I hope to take it and make it an annual thing where each year I'm already asking, you know, Tana and B. Mitch, people that they think deserve the opportunity to win the same type of award, which is our NFL legend. Our NFL Legend of the Year Award. That's the way I look at it.
Very cool, man. Well, Gary, thank you for making time.
Appreciate
for
you,
us,
brother, man.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You guys.
All right, bro.
Gary,
hi, man.
Gary Clark, give him a follow at Gary Clark Inc. Just an absolute badass.
He's a badass
for
man.
The burgundy and gold for many, many seasons. 8 years in Washington, almost 9,000 receiving yards,
and surely this total can't be right, 58 touchdowns. 58 touchdowns in eight seasons. Oh, damn.
That's doing it.
That's a dude getting it done at a very high level.
Let's go to the Rude guest hotline right now. Welcome onto the program. Our buddy, Jay Gruden. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Jay, the longtime play caller in the National Football League, former head coach here in D.C. What's up, Jay? How you been?
I've been great. How you guys been doing?
Good, buddy.
We are kicking it. So I wanted to get you on to talk Deebo Samuel. First of all, the haul that San Francisco gets back, if you want to call it that, what was given up? Washington takes on a little under $18 million in cap space next year or this coming season for Deebo, and they give up a fifth-round pick. Thoughts on that as a return or an amount to give up for him?
I love the trade. I think it's good for both teams, really. I think it's better for Washington. It gives Jade another weapon, a guy that can catch the ball in short areas and make big plays after the catch, a guy that's physical, a guy that can block. I know people don't want to hear, hey, I got a receiver that can block. No, it's kind of important, especially with the offense that he runs. He do the jet sweeps, the reverses, get the ball in his hands. He make things happen. You know, he's not a guy that is going to catch 85, 90 balls for 1,800 yards or anything like that, but he's going to be a great role player. He's going to have significant production, and it's going to really help out Jade and make the game easier.
Yeah, to your point, Jay, a lot of folks we've heard from were grumbling a little bit about maybe what he can't do, maybe not taking the top off the defense or running certain routes. To me, I'm focused on what he can do. Go into that. How would you use him?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, there's certain things that, you know, certain guys don't do. I mean, this is not a top taker offer. That's okay. We have Terry McLaurin who runs 4-3. He can do that. And maybe get another guy. This is a guy that can line up in the slot. He can line up anywhere. He can catch the perimeter screens. He can block for the perimeter screens. He can do the jet sweeps. He can do the arounds. He can line up at running back, play running back. Most importantly, he catches the under routes when he's in zone coverage. If he finds holes in zones, he splits them. He makes great runs after contact. He's physical. He's dependable. I like his game a lot. I know he's been hurt. He slowed down a little bit, but I just think for the role that I think Cliff's going to use him in, I think he's a perfect fit.
Would you, if you were Washington, be worried at all about the weight issue, if we want to call it that in air quotes? You know, where he gained a little bit of weight last season, was out of shape?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think there's going to be a lot to that. I think Deebo knows that he's got a year left on his contract and make something happen for himself financially in a big, big time way. He can't be 20 pounds overweight. He won't get anything. You know, I think it's a big year for him. I think he's going to be motivated to come in and make a lot of things happen. I'm not worried about his weight. I'm more worried about his injuries. I think the medical team and the training staff have to do a really good job to make sure he's taken care of. I think Dan Quinn will do a good job throughout the year to make sure he gives him plenty of time off to make sure he's healthy, because his style of football is a physical brand now. He's got to have some time off, make sure his body recovers so he can play at full strength on Sundays.
Would you try to think about doing some kind of program like they kind of did with Eckler, or maybe limit his touches or limit his reps? I mean, it didn't work perfectly with Eckler, but the idea made sense to me because you want him for the long haul. Would you think about doing something like that, or it's, we got Deebo, I'm going to use Deebo?
Yeah, during the week, I think you will, but I think on game day, unleash him. I think still the way Jaden plays and the way Cliff calls plays, it's not like he's going to be a feature player on every play. He's going to be maybe the second or third option. He'll be the first option on a jet sweeps or the reverses or the rounds, whatever you call them. But for the most part, I expect him to get, you know, 5, 6, 7 touches a game, and those will be possibilities for big plays. And then it might only be 4 or 5 yards, but it'll be positive plays. But I think moving forward, you use Deebo like you use Deebo, not like Deebo was used in 2021, where he's a running back half the time and had all that production. I don't think he's going to be quite that big a role, but I think there is going to be a pretty good role for him.
I want to go deeper into the fit in the passing game. I'm just so excited about him in their screen game. And some of the stuff around the line of scrimmage you were talking about, I think everybody in the league runs a ton of like these mesh concepts now where they get these rubs. But like to me, that's Deebo's wheelhouse, where he's got a full head of steam, he catches the ball, and he gets up the field. And Washington ran a ton of that, you know, a yard or two downfield this past season. I don't know how unique that is, that he's a fit in that for them. But like, how would you use him, and what do you make of just the schematics of it?
Well, you're right. I think pro football's come to that. A lot of that stuff, a lot of the, you know, the shallow crosses, the mesh plays, like you talked about, a lot of the bubble screens, the release screens, the tunnel screens, the, you know, the jet sweeps, all that stuff is a major role in pro football now. And you got to have people that can do it. I know that Washington last year had OZ and a little bit of Crowder did it, a little bit of Austin Eckler did it, but this guy's a different guy. He can handle all that stuff, and that's a huge package to have. And then you pull that stuff out, and then you got play actions off of it, and then, you know, not to mention in the running game, he's going to help because he can dig out safeties, he can block corners, and go out and crack linebackers or crack defensive ends because he's a big physical guy. He's a jack of all trades. He can do it all. You know, you may not be able to run a 4.3 40 anymore, but he can do a lot of things that a receiver needs to do to be productive in this offense.
Jake Gruden with us here on G&D. So what would be the compliment to him now that he's a compliment to Terry? Like, what would sort of round out this receiving core perfectly for you?
Well, if you're going to run a three receiver set, then Terry's a great compliment, and you got Debo. I'd like to see another guy maybe with some wheels that can really run. I don't know what they're going to do with Deami Brown. I don't know if they have it in the house. I'm not sure Luke McCaffrey's that guy, but I think they get a guy in a draft, a guy that can really, really run. I'd like to see that. Terry can run, obviously, but to get one more guy that can run, add another physical presence, maybe another tight end. I mean, big thing, they got to get the tight end situation right, whether it's Zach Ertz or somebody in a draft or what have you. I think that's an important position they need to fill right now. And maybe one more back that can really strike fear in some people. But as far as a receiving core concerned right now, I think the three they have on contract, McCaffrey, Debo, and Terry, are a pretty good start right now.
So we'll get to the tight end and the running back in a second with Jay Gruden, who's joining us on Grant and Danny. But I want to ask you about Davante Adams. Got cut by the Jets today. Danny and I were just discussing him. For the record, I'm not interested. Danny has legitimate interest in bringing him in here. He's 32 years old. I just think, you know, you got a lot of mouths to feed at that point. He's a guy that demands the football. Would you think he'd be a fit in any way?
Yeah, I probably lean towards no on that one. I think there's major needs where money has to go, especially on the defense, tight end, like we mentioned before. I think they got to really address the secondary, make sure what they're doing with Jeremy Chinn and obviously Frankie, or the defensive end, the pass rusher Fowler. Obviously, the middle linebacker Wagner, they have some issues there. They got to make sure they take care of before they add a 32-year-old receiver. I mean, Debo's a great player. He's a great Swiss Army knife. He can do it all. I think that's a start at the receiver position. They'll obviously address it, maybe free agents. The problem with free agents, there's not really a lot of great ones left. You know, you got, you know, Godwin's hurt, Diggs is hurt. You know, Hopkins is a little bit older. Deontay Johnson stinks. You know, Darius Slayton, nobody's excited about that. Keenan Allen's a little bit older. Joshua Palmer's a little bit older. That's why I think getting Debo is a huge deal for them, because the cabinet is pretty empty when it comes to receiver free agents. I think they're going to have to get one in the draft and hopefully re-sign Deami. I think Deami did some good things other than fumble late in the year. I think he played well at the end of the year. So hopefully they get him back.
And so your point, Jay, about the free agent market is kind of my point as to why I'm interested in Adams. I wouldn't go over the top. I wouldn't win some crazy bidding war and I'd let someone else do that. But my point is that it's going to be hard to add talent. And maybe if you don't buy in the receiver class this year, as a lot of folks don't, I'm no expert on it, obviously, but just the way folks are writing, there may be one or two guys that only that goes in the first round. Are you going to really be able to, you know, upgrade the talent that way? That's why I'm saying I'd at least kick the tires. Give me your reaction to that.
Yeah, no, if they signed Davante, I wouldn't be upset. I mean, I'd be surprised a little bit, but Davante could still play. He had some good games down the stretch for the Jets last year. He could still run some good routes and do some things effectively. I just think, I don't know. I just don't see that happening. That's all. Realistically, I don't see them going out and getting Davante.
There's also a financial element too, right?
Financial element. Yeah. I just don't see that happening. If they got them, great, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, let's talk tight end then. Level of interest in bringing Ertz back, or would you try to find somebody a little more dynamic for that tight end one role? I know you're such a proponent of being able to block as well, and Ertz does a pretty good job in that regard.
Yeah, I'd take him. I'd sign him again. It's better to have a bird in hand, right? I think you got to have him, and then hopefully, you know, you get another year with Ben Snott. He's progressed a little bit, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do with Bates, you know, if you re-sign him. I'm really big on the tight end position. I don't like going into the draft saying, okay, let's get a tight end in the fourth or sixth round. It ain't going to happen. I mean, you're not going to replace Zach Ertz with a fourth-round tight end from Central Michigan. It's not going to happen. You got to have a veteran tight end there that knows how to block and run the routes, be Jaden Daniels' security blanket. I know he won't separate like he used to, but he was pretty productive last year. I would make sure they sign him. And then if you get a guy in a draft to compete with Sonat and play with Sonat and maybe develop under Zach Ertz for next year or the year after, I'm all for that. But I don't think you're going to get anybody in a third, fourth, fifth round that's better than Zach Ertz.
Where does Ben Sennett fit for you? Like, I thought, given the preseason and the body, skill set, how physical he was, I'm going, as the season progresses, we'll see more and more of him, and we just didn't. He caught a fake punt in the playoffs, but that was about it. Where does he fit for you kind of in your grand tight end plan?
Yeah, he's sight unseen for me, so I don't know. I don't know. I know he was very productive at K-State, and, you know, he looked good in the preseason. And, you know, I don't know. I think he might just need some time. You know, like I said before, this position is a very hard position to play. You know, you got to learn all the run blocking, all the motion, all the routes. And it's you got to be a very smart, intellectual guy and physical, and you got to have the knowledge to know when to sit down in zones and when to run away from man coverage and all that stuff. And Zach, despite his slowing down a little bit, knows all that stuff. And so not hopefully he's learning it and can eventually become like Zach Ertz. But they need another one. But I would seriously sign Zach Ertz to make sure they had him in the building before they just gave up on him and said, okay, Ben, it's your team right now. You know, I don't know if he's ready for that yet.
The voice of Jay Gruden with us here on Grant and Danny. Now, you were head coach in the NFL during an era where the importance of running back subsided a little bit, and the value at the position in terms of what those guys made fell off as well. There was a decline. I mean, you were plugging in guys like Rob Kelly, who were undrafted at times to start. We just saw today Saquon Barkley get a two-year deal for $40-plus million bucks, $20 million per year from the Eagles. What do you think of that?
Well, I think guys like that deserve it. You know, there's not many guys that really can do a third, three-down back type thing and have that much of an impact on an offense. There's few and far between. There's a lot of guys that can, if you just change uniforms, they'll be productive. You know, I think that's why the running back market was probably not as, you know, you weren't getting as much money because there's so many guys that could do the role. You know, like you mentioned Rob Kelly. I mean, he averaged 4.5 yards a carry for us. He did some pretty good things before he got hurt. And a lot of teams have that type of guy on their team. And you look at the draft this year, hell, there's 10 or 12 of them that you feel like you'd come in and maybe be a, you know, a change of pace back. I mean, you got this Tootin guy from Virginia Tech. You got Jaden Blue from Texas. You got Henderson from Ohio State. You got Judkins from Ohio State. You got Mari Hampton from North Carolina. You know, you got a lot of guys out there that could come in here and compete for that, you know, change of pace type back or your first and second down back. But not many of them have the explosive and the home run ability as Saquon Barkley. That's why he's getting paid like that.
The Commanders don't have a fourth or fifth round pick right now, and maybe that'd be RB range for some of what you're talking about in terms of these speedbacks. But how would you try to address that where it sounds like you're like me, you want a home run hitter in the backfield?
Yeah, they're hard to find, but there are some guys you might be able to get later on that have that ability that can really run and give you something. It just depends on what they're going to do with Austin Ekeler. I don't know if he's under contract, I believe, so I think they still have B-Rob and Austin Ekeler. At least they have a starting point right now. I don't think McNichols will re-sign. So they get another young guy that can come in and compete, whether it's a sixth or seventh round or third round, whatever it might be. I think they'll find a guy that can do that. I just don't think they're going to find a guy of that's going to be a Saquon Barkley status. But they're still going to be good enough guys that can be productive in this offense. And B-Rob, you know, he did some good things early in here. He kind of fell off at the end. Austin was doing really good until he got hurt. So those two guys together is 1-2 is not a bad combo to have starting off, and then you add another one in the draft.
Jay, I thought the offensive line was fine for the most part this past year. You mentioned B-Rob kind of falling off. I think part of that was run blocking maybe wasn't as good second half of the year for whatever reason. I want to do better than fine, though. Kind of give me your assessment and who might be, you know, due for an upgrade.
Yeah, that's a tough call because you're right. Early in the season, I thought they played extremely well. I thought they played better than they were on paper. On paper, they're a pretty average line, especially when you throw in a rookie left tackle, you know, and you know, so I don't know. And then, but Cosby's injury concerns me a little bit. I think they're going to have to upgrade there. And then they got the side of Brandon Coleman, a long-term option for him at left tackle. Are they going to go out and get one at free agency? Are they going to try out spend and get Ronnie Stanley or somebody like that at left tackle and then move him to guard? And then what are you going to do with Algretti? You know, so they got some issues they got to figure out. I think they have a very good line coach and run game coordinators and all that stuff. And Dan Quinn has a pretty good pulse on him. But I think from a starting core principle, those guys really played well together at times last year. So it's not the end of the world if they don't get a free agent, but they need to upgrade a draft, maybe first or second round, try to get a guy to come in here and play.
Did you see enough from Coleman to think he could be a left tackle?
Yeah, I think he played pretty well. You know, really, you just got to figure, you know, are these the guys that can compete and eventually overtake Philadelphia, their defensive line? You know what I mean? Those are the guys you got to really block. Are they good enough to play against Micah Parsons and the rest of these guys for the Giants, Dexter Lawrence? And you just got to make sure how they competed against those guys. Watch the tape. And did they hold up against the best players in the National Football League? And if not, if you had to give them help all the time, then you got to look to upgrade. But yeah, I haven't really dove that deep into it, but I was impressed with the way they played throughout the season. They did get the NFC Championship game because they played pretty damn good.
Jay, quarterback news today. The Vikings are not going to be tagging Sam Darnold, which makes it sound like he's just going to walk into free agency. I have a hard time not viewing this as hitting the lottery and then not cashing the ticket. I mean, I know that he collapsed down the stretch, but the guy just threw 35 tutties and 12 picks and went for 4,300 yards. I don't know, man. I think I got to tag him and try to trade him or do something other than just say, hey, good season. We'll see you next time. They're losing him for nothing. And I'm talking to a guy who saw the Cousins thing play out here. But
the same thing. Yeah. Same thing with Cousins, right? Same exact thing. Kirk had a great year. We went to the playoffs and lost to the Packers in 1 year. And then the next year, I think we're a game away. We lost to the Giants or whatever. And the next thing you know, he's gone. And we're scratching our ass. So, yeah, you know, I think that they have somebody in the building, though, that they feel really good about, J.J. McCarthy. We did not have that at the time. So there's a big difference there. And ended up training for Alex Smith, which, you know, he was pretty good until he broke his leg in half. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm not there. I think Sam had a really good year, but I think they must really feel good about J.J. McCarthy, despite him missing the entire season and not practicing at all. He must have really done a hell of a job in training camp and in the preseason for them to make this move.
Is there a fit for Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Giants would be a great fit for him because Daboll's got to win right now. They got Malik Nabers. They got a pretty good running game. They get another receiver in a draft. Maybe, you know, upgrade their offensive line a little bit. And that way they can take their high draft pick and pick somebody like Travis Hunter, somebody really, really good that can really help them. So I think they're still a team out there for him. Maybe it's the Raiders. Yeah, because I'm not convinced of the quarterbacks in this draft, personally. I'm not. I think Cam Ward's pretty good. I'm not convinced Shador Sanders is going to come in and light it up on Sundays. I'm really not. And Jackson Dart, him either. So I think a veteran guy like Sam or Aaron Rodgers would really help somebody out.
So Ward's definitely your number one in this class. What worries you about Sanders? Is it just him holding the ball, or what don't you like?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's an accurate guy. Just, you know, I just think it's down the field. His arm strength concerns me a little bit. He holds the ball a little bit too much. And, you know, I don't know, prima donna type guy. I don't know. Just something's just great, not right there for me. Something's not right, Danny. I can't put my hand on it, Grant. I just don't know what the hell it is. But I just don't think he's ready year one.
That's been the sentiment all of a sudden, right? It's turned into that. I don't know when the worm turned. Maybe it was the combine. Who knows if it's disinformation in this Lions season?
Watch the BYU game at the end of the year. I mean, when he's supposed to be playing at his best, he's horrible. He wasn't very good. And he had some pressure. He didn't know the pressure was coming. I like to watch guys as the season goes on. I like to think they get better and have a mastery of the offense. And they were atrocious. So I don't know. Maybe it's the offensive coordinator. Maybe it's the offensive line. Can't put it all on the quarterback. I know that. But I was just disappointed in the way he played late in the season when chips were on the line.
Jay, we appreciate you. Thanks so much for a few minutes, man. Enjoy what's left of the day.
You got it. Hey, it's my birthday, by the way, man. You guys need to wish me happy birthday?
Oh, is it your birthday, dude? Jay?
Yeah, 58 years old, man. I ended up taking a nap today for the first time.
That's awesome.
Wow, that's awesome. Time. 58.
That's awesome.
So what are you anticipating in the year 58, like changing, other than more pain in the morning when you wake up?
Death, probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Let's try to avoid that.
That's this year, buddy? Hope not.
Let's stave it off for another year or two. What do you say?
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
see
you,
bro. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, man.
Let's go. Gruden's birthday.
How about that? Jay Gruden's birthday.
What do you get Jay for a birthday present?
Something golf related. A new head cover, new towel, something where you could play golf easier.
New golf bag.
Yeah, something like that.
Terps at Michigan tonight, 6:30 tip, pregame at 6 here on your home for Maryland basketball, the Team 980. Michigan just a 2-point favorite. They got blown out Sunday at home by Illinois, and they were lucky to beat Rutgers at home the game before that. Maryland got a win at Penn State off of that just gut punch against Michigan State a week ago tonight in a building that was just incredible. Joining us right now is Greg Waddle. Greg writes and covers college basketball for Sleepers Media, Action Network, and Bleacher Report. And I'm just scrolling through your timeline. It looks like you're a Big Ten guy. Did you go to a Big Ten school?
I did. I'm a Michigan basketball fan. This is a good time to bring me in for this game. It should be an interesting one, but you mentioned the word luck. Michigan's had quite a bit of luck this season to be alone in second place with two games left. I think they've won 11 games by 4 points or less, and it came crashing down this weekend for a game I was in the building for against Illinois. Maryland can pose a lot of similar issues that I think Illinois gave Michigan, so it should be an interesting matchup tonight.
So let's start there, since you're a Michigan guy, and I'm glad you are. So I've said this for a couple of weeks running, like, I think the two big guys are great, and the matchup with Reese and Queen will be a really interesting one, and I love Danny Wolf and his ability to kind of play everywhere as a guy that can really handle it, but I don't think Michigan's guards are anywhere near as good as Maryland's guards. Do you agree or disagree?
How they're currently playing, absolutely agree. How they were playing at the beginning portion of the season, I think it was closer. Look, Jacoby Gillespie's been sensational. I actually was on a segment this morning with my co-host of our podcast where we were basically submitting our votes for Big Ten all-conference teams. And I think Jacoby Gillespie's been one of the 10 best players in this league this year. He's been remarkable, the efficiency he's shown, the shot-making. He's taking care of the basketball. He kind of just makes this team go, even though they're very front-court-driven. I have a lot of respect for what he's done. Trey Donaldson was doing a lot of the similar things that Gillespie's done all season through the first 2 months for Michigan. And he's just lost all confidence. He hasn't been able to make jump shots consistently lately. He's been on the bench in big moments. He's in single digits as a scorer in 4 of their last 5 games. And you can see it affecting him. He started slumping with his 3-point shot really in the last 3 weeks. And it's just affected his whole game and put more pressure on the front court duo of Golden and Wolf to really find answers without the spacing that they need in the half court. So, you know, I think given current form, absolutely Maryland has a massive advantage in the backcourt. But if both players play to their ceiling, I wouldn't say it's a huge mismatch between Donaldson and Gillespie. The mismatch that truly has been there all season long to me comes with Rodney Rice and Shelton Miguel and the spacing that they provide for the point guard and the big. Michigan has not had that. Reuben Jones and Roddy Gale are complete non-shooters right now. Roddy Gale is 1-for-27 from his last 27 three-point attempts. I mean, that's Deshaun Harris-Smith level bad, and Kevin Willard has been able to find other answers. Dusty May has not.
Yeah, Greg, Rodney Rice has been maybe the biggest reveal for us this year because he was the least heralded of the guys coming in via the portal. Part of it was that he was banged up also during the offseason. I actually think in 2026 he's got a chance to work his way into the first round. I think he's that versatile mid-range. He can certainly stretch the floor. He defends. There's a lot about Rodney Rice that I think has grown on all of us and maybe by surprise, but I think, you know, Michigan's season obviously was a surprise. Like Denton and I were just talking about this, you know, Maryland's got a shot if they can win tonight and win on Saturday to potentially end up in second in the league. And Michigan State wasn't picked to win this league. Michigan wasn't picked to finish in the top two. It was really Purdue, Indiana, and who? Like, Oregon? Like, I can't remember before the season started. Maybe Illinois. Were those the picks to win it? Purdue to repeat? And maybe Indiana to be right there?
Yeah, I think coming in, the narrative was certainly Purdue and Indiana. The whole league would kind of run through the state of Indiana. Indiana had that huge transfer portal class that they spent millions of dollars on, and Purdue was the two-time defending champs with the preseason player of the year, Braden Smith, so it made sense. I think Illinois and UCLA, too, they've had good seasons. I mean, they're not far off. I think they're a game and 2 games behind where Maryland's at in the conference standings right now, and Illinois, talent-wise, was picked near the top of the league, given the European professional prospects they brought in, and I think people didn't know what to do with UCLA in the offseason, just knowing there's a lot of talent, they're deep, they're tough, and Mick Cronin's a good coach, but yeah, I felt like the story of the season was supposed to be Purdue versus Indiana. Instead, we were just one state off. It ended up being a race between Michigan and Michigan State.
Yeah, and Izzo's got one of those teams back. I mean, they're deep, they're physical, they're aggressive. Everybody can guard. I mean, basically 1-5. We saw that up close here last Wednesday night. Do you view Michigan State among the Big Ten teams as, if I told you one makes the Final Four, is that the team or is it somebody else?
Yeah, they're the only team that I would put that type of run on as far as a really realistic outcome here. I mean, I think there's a lot of teams in the top half of this league that if all breaks right and they play to their ceiling four consecutive games, sure, you could see Maryland do that. You could see Michigan do that. You could see Illinois do that. The reality is a lot of those teams have a fatal flaw that is going to come into play. Michigan can't make a shot right now and has no bench. I would argue that Maryland, as good as their starting lineup is, if a player gets in foul trouble or, God forbid, anything went wrong long-term with one of those guys, there aren't really any answers coming off the bench for Kevin Willard. And I think you saw that in the Michigan State game. I mean, he ended up scoring 55 points. Shelton Miguel was kind of auto-benched for most of the first half, and I thought it really hurt the half-court offense. So, you know, Michigan State's season has been a magical one. This five-game stretch where they've just ran through the quote-unquote other great teams in this league, Illinois, Purdue, Michigan, Maryland, Wisconsin, three road wins in that span, and really leaving no doubt. I mean, other than the Maryland game, which Michigan State did lead for 90% of, those games were not all that close. I mean, they're winning by 3-4 possessions at minimum against the other great teams in the league. Their defense is just so elite. They've got four guards that can just terrorize any backcourt opponents. They're so tough on the boards. Their bigs just fly around, and they're super physical. And the reality is they don't have to worry about foul trouble or injury because they go so deep, and there's no drop-off from the guys that play at the top of their lineup versus the 8th, 9th, 10th guys in the rotation. So it does feel like a team, especially with Jace Richardson's emergence. You know, the one thing you could criticize with Michigan State was they don't have that go-to guy that you need. March run. Now they do. Jace Richardson is one of the best guards in the country. He's proven that in this five-game stretch. And to me, that's the only team that I think has a really realistic outcome where they can make a Final Four run.
You're a Big Ten guy. After Izzo, who's the second best coach in the league?
It's got to be Matt Painter.
I agree.
It's kind of funny watching those two battle it out for supremacy this year and Painter dominating it the last few years because they're the two that refuse to go in the portal and try and build out their team that way.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Greg Gard's very underrated, and maybe he's not with a lot of the real inside the Big Ten people, but I think the job that he's done this year and in recent years, that team can score, unlike a lot of the Wisconsin teams who remember. By the way, did you watch the end of that Ohio State-Nebraska game last night?
Oh, yeah. I was melting down. It was absurd. I still don't know how Ohio State snuck away with a win there. It's insane.
Well, especially the travel on the inbounds play that wasn't called. That was, I mean, the whoever was inbounding it, I mean, shuffled three or four, spots. Can't do that on an out of bounds play on the sideline or underneath if it's not after a basket. But so did Ohio State lock down a spot with a win? Like, what does the back end of this league look like after Michigan State, Michigan, Purdue, Maryland, Wisconsin, UCLA, Oregon, and Illinois? Those are the eight givens, right? After that, who gets in?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think Ohio State should be in. Now, if they lose at Indiana, which they're a one-point underdog on paper this weekend, they finish 17-14. It's pretty rare to see a team with 15 losses in the NCAA tournament, but I think the reality is the bubble is pretty damn weak this year. Like, we're talking Indiana versus North Carolina as, like, teams that are not even in the last four in right now, but the next four in. So I do think, the strength of this conference as a whole, it's not top-heavy. As I mentioned, Michigan State's really the only team that I think is a serious candidate as a top-10 team in the sport. But from 2 through 8, you've got a bunch of teams that at times this season have played like a top-15 team and are somewhere between the 10th and 30th best team in the country and have reason to believe that there's some upside that they could make tournament runs. For me, I would project that Indiana, Ohio State, and Nebraska all end up inside the field. Do I think all three of those teams deserve a bid? Probably not, to be honest with you, but it's a weak bubble with how down the ACC and the bottom half of the Big East have been this year.
Yeah, I think we say this almost every year. It's like, yeah, that team actually could get in, and they're like, no, you can't, they can't get in. And it's like, well, they do have to fill out all 68 spots. And that's what's happened here in recent years. There's somebody that ends up in the field where you didn't give them a shot, but you got to fill out the field. And so the Big Ten's going to be there. I don't know. I'm assuming you have spent a lot more time with the rest of the country. Like, the SEC versus the Big Ten, the SEC seems not only top-heavy, but also very middle and end-heavy. How many of those we're going to see a lot of Big Ten-SEC matchups in the tournament. We won't be able to avoid them. It's likely we'll probably get a 7-10 or maybe even a 6-11 game in the first round. How will those two conferences end up at the end of March, head-to-head?
Well, I think they've been the two best leagues in the sport, and I will say this, if the Big Ten disappoints against the SEC in postseason play, it's not an indictment on the Big Ten at all. The SEC is that good this year. I mean, they will dispose of pretty much anybody that they're paired up with in that four. If there was like an SEC challenge with another league, I think they would probably eviscerate any of the other four power leagues this year. As you mentioned, it's incredibly top-heavy. They've got four teams in Auburn, Florida, Alabama, and Tennessee that are all competing for the fourth number one seed. Auburn's for sure going to get one, but Florida, Alabama, Tennessee, one of them's going to get a one seed. The next two are going to be the top two seeds. All four of those teams could win a national championship. All four of those teams should feel like this is a year that they should make the Final Four. And then you've got really six to seven more teams that are tournament locks that, you know, have picked off some of those top five teams in the country multiple times that have as much upside as anyone. It's just a gauntlet of a year. Like, you take a team like Kentucky, who's 9-8 in the SEC. They've had a bunch of injury issues, but they have seven wins against the top 15 teams in college basketball. They were a top five team in the AP poll at the end of non-conference play because they couldn't lose. And I think if you drop a team like Kentucky in the Big Ten, there's a really good chance they could have won the league, if not finished second or third. And again, they really had no chance to survive the gauntlet that is the SEC this year. So it will be no shame if we do see a lot of those matchups, and especially for the teams that are on the 7 or the 10 line of the Big Ten, you know, middle of the pack, 5th through 12th finishes for us. I don't expect them to go beat really any of those middle-of-the-pack SEC teams. We just got to hope that some of the teams near the top, like a Maryland, a Wisconsin, can make a run and make the league look up pretty good at the end of the year.
Greg Waddle is joining us at GWIZZY12, GWIZZY12 on X on Twitter. He covers college basketball for Sleepers Media, Action Network, and Bleacher Report. So let's get into it here, because I mean, we understand what March is. It's matchups, it's one and done, anything can happen. But right now, give me the four teams that you think will be there at the end, and give me somebody outside, you know, the top 16, you know, the top four seed in a region that you really like to make a deep run.
Yeah, it's great because it plays right into my honest answer here. I think the story of college hoops this season has been that there are three teams that are pretty historically great. Duke has the second best efficiency margin since 30 years ago, according to KenPom. I mean, they're rivaling the 1999 Blue Devils as the best team that we've ever seen. And it's narratively, it's been them versus Auburn this year. Auburn just suffered a tough one at Texas A&M last night that, you know, it doesn't really change the way I view them, to be honest. But I think Duke and Auburn, they played in the non-conference. Duke got a win by 6 points at Cameron Indoor. It was a high-level game. Those two teams are both historically great. And then Houston right behind them, efficiency margin numbers-wise, they're better than 11 of the last 15 national champions per KenPom. Yeah. We don't talk about them that way because Duke and Auburn are even better. But all three of those teams are going to be split up. They're guaranteed to get one seed. They ran through their respective conferences. I have a hard time picking against any of them. And I do think it would be good for the sport this year if we see the three elite teams each make it to the Final Four and have to battle it out. For the fourth spot, I've been really screaming the praises of BYU the last couple weeks.
Big win last night.
Fit the profile of teams that sort of overachieve in March. They've got an NBA talent in Yegor Demin. It's going to be a lottery pick. but he's not necessarily the do-everything guy for him. He kind of plays table setter as the assist man. They're physical. They're dominant inside. They're a great two-point percentage discrepancy team. They win the boards almost every single game they play, and they shoot a bunch of threes. Like, they are an offense filled with shooters that shoots at a high volume and is shooting like 44% in road games over the last six games in Big 12 play. They're on a seven-game win streak with wins at Arizona and at Iowa State in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, a couple of weeks ago when I said this, it felt like a really off-the-wall pick. I think it feels like a less off-the-wall pick now than it did 2 weeks ago. But if BYU can somehow find that fourth region, that's a team that I would book all the way to the Final Four.
Yeah, Kevin Young coaches BYU and really didn't have a college background, right? Wasn't he with the 76ers for several years as an assistant and maybe in Phoenix?
Yeah, he was. Phoenix most recently, I believe.
Yeah. Is BYU a much older team per usual or not?
They brought a lot of guys back from the team that Mark Pope left, and Kevin Young was able to really build a roster that sort of built out the best of both worlds because, you know, he's got A.J. DeBanta coming in next year. His NBA ties have proven already to have an immediate impact in terms of the funding that they have and the types of players that will come to Provo. But, yeah, Yegor Demin is a consensus top 10 prospect in the NBA draft. He's a freshman. You have Cannon Catchings, another kid that could be a first-round pick. And then you've got guys like Dallin Hall, Trevin Nell, Kevakeda, Richie Saunders, who have spent 3 to 4 years in the BYU system that are just veteran winners, that are elite shot-making players. And like I said, they've got toughness, they've got skill, they've got experience, they've got talent. And like, I'm a little bummed that they've had such big wins, loud performances lately, because the whole world has noticed how good they are, and it's a less off-the-grid pick. But I love this team, and if you haven't watched them, you should really dial in.
You know, you mentioned some of the KenPom numbers. Florida is in that same category with Houston and Duke. I mean, they're top 10 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. And, you know, I know that's what you were referencing with Houston and Duke in particular.
Yeah, Florida's really, really good. I would have zero qualms about, you know, saying that they could win a national championship. I think that fourth one seed is going to be critical for that group of Florida, Tennessee, and Alabama, because one of those two teams, if not two of those teams, are going to be paired in the Duke and Houston regions. And like I said, I just have so much respect for what Duke and Houston have become. It's hard for me to envision anybody beating those teams until they get to each other. But Florida's a team, we've already seen them beat Auburn. They were dominant physically in that game. They've got a bunch of front court depth. Walter Clayton's one of the best guards in the country. And yeah, Todd Golden's done a really great job, especially given the news that sort of hit. He was accused of some pretty scummy things.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Ultimately, the charges were dropped. So for him to keep this team on track to a 25-4 record, given all of that in the middle of the season, it's been quite impressive.
Yeah, good for the school, too, for not overreacting and letting it play out in that spot. All right, two more to finish up. So what's Maryland's best case seeding-wise and worst case?
You know, it feels like with a strong finish here, I wouldn't be surprised to see Maryland end up as one of the top three seeds. I think anything higher than that would be a little surprising. But, yeah, three seeds feels like the range for me. Now, I don't expect them to lose at Michigan and lose to Northwestern, but, you know, if there was really a losing skid and maybe an early exit in the Big Ten tournament, I would think they could drop down maybe a six seed territory. But to me, it'd be pretty surprising if Maryland ends anywhere other than the 4 or 5 line, which is not necessarily the greatest place if you're trying to make a Final Four run this year, but it's certainly a spot that they could easily win two games and make a second weekend in.
So do you have votes for Freshman of the Year in the Big Ten? Do you have a vote?
I do, and it's got to be Derek Queen.
Yeah, that's what I would think. And I would assume Cooper Flagg Denton, right, he's got to be a significant favorite to win Player of the Year. Am I right about that? I haven't looked at it recently.
You are.
Yeah. Yeah, I jumped around a little bit. Last week it was a big Jani Broom rush in the odds. But, yeah, he's been so stinky the last two games. I think Cooper Flagg has overtaken him again.
And do you see? And you got Gillespie on the second team. What about Rice or Queen or even Reese as chances of making the top two teams?
I would be It honestly depends on how the Big Ten ends up doing this, which I haven't heard how they're going to present this. I saw the way they did it with the women's teams. There were 9 players on the first team All Big Ten.
What?
Yeah, crazy, right? It makes no sense. But given that there's 18 teams, it won't stun me if that's something that the conference does. I'll disagree with it because I think it goes against the whole idea of giving some special accomplishments to players that deserve it. But assuming that they stick to 5 players per team, I can tell you what my vote is. I have Jacoby Gillespie on the second team. I have Derek Queen on the first team, and I have Derek Queen as the freshman of the year. I really have not considered any of the others. I mean, Julian Reese is a great player. I think Rice and Miguel have both been great, but you're talking 15 spots for 3 teams. There's teams that don't even have their first option listed, that like Michigan right. State is going to league, and I don't know if they're going to have a player on the third team All Big Ten list because they don't have anybody with the individual numbers like that. So it's kind of crazy year given how many teams are here, but it would be stunning to me if you don't see Gillespie and Queen somewhere on the 3 teams combined. I'd be pretty surprised.
Greg, great job. Really enjoyed it. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
Greg Waddle, everybody. Action Network, Bleacher Report, Sleepers Media at GWIZZY12 on X and on Twitter. You know, what he said about Duke, Denton, we've talked a little bit about it over the last week. That's the team every time I watch them, I'm like, I don't think anybody can beat them. And we didn't think at midseason that there was a dominant team. I think Duke is much better than Auburn right now. Let's talk about that when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.